This episode of Talk of the Devils is sponsored once more by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit 1 million orders phase. Yep, Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling ETH style turtleneck sweaters or blueprints for brand new stadiums, Shopify helps you sell everywhere, from their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to Talk of the Devils, you can sign up for our $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/reddevils, all in lowercase without any spaces. So go to shopify.com/reddevils to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, that's shopify.com/reddevils.
The Athletic.
I mean, that finish was fucking brilliant.
Will it be one more chance?
It might be, because here's Cavani. Ronaldo's waiting in the middle, not many others. Fernandez. Fred. Ronaldo. Down towards Lingard. Ronaldo! Manchester United win! It's Cristiano Ronaldo! On this big landmark night, with a goal of priceless quality.
Yes, this is Talk of the Devils, the podcast dedicated to Manchester United from The Athletic. We are going to reflect on an absolutely crazy night at Old Trafford. Don't worry, we're not going to pop the bubble straight away. We're going to revel in the glory of Ronaldo's late winner, but we also need to assess exactly what went on in the previous 90 minutes. And we'll also take a look ahead to Everton at the weekend with a sense of buzz, but also a look at what Benitez has done to that lot as well. Right, okay. Laurie Whitwell from The Athletic. If you had to describe last night and that 95th minute winner in one word, what would it be?
Bedlam.
Bedlam. Andy Mitten, also of The Athletic and United We Stand editor. If you had to describe last night's 95th minute goal in one word, what would it be?
Brilliant.
Andy can't do anything with one word. That is amazing.
No, brilliant's a word, isn't it? Mate, that was more than worth it. Yeah, right. Wow. Where do we start? At the end, I suppose. That's one of the best moments at Manchester United in years, Andy, isn't it?
It was fantastic. And we're going to go deeper onto this, as we should do.
Of course.
Villarreal, the best team I've seen at Old Trafford, I think, since PSG. I think we're very, very unlucky not to get a draw, let alone to be defeated. But what a moment. Let's focus on that for a second. The atmosphere, which was good all night. The fact it happened in front of the Stretford end. The 3 points, which United needed more than anything. I said that the other day. It's about the 3 points. Everything else is secondary to that. People will forget how poor Manchester United were in the first half. That it was Ronaldo, that the substitutes had such an influence. It was just brilliant. And the ground was rocking for a long time after. People were still stood in the Stretford end 30, 40 minutes after, singing Viva Ronaldo. And it just felt like a great European night. We've not been having them. There's been COVID. So to have everyone back in... And for the atmosphere to be so good.
We've not really been having them anyway, Andy, have we?
No, we haven't. And you know, Europa League nights are not Champions League nights. And group games are not semi-finals, you know, let's be honest. But it was a big game. And it was bouncing. And it felt like it really mattered. And we had a top quality opponent come to Old Trafford, dictate the game, boss the game. They were very unlucky not to go ahead. And yet Manchester United somehow, out of all that, beat Villarreal. I spoke to Kepue after the game, and he just eyeballed me and went, "You got your revenge." Well, it's not me, mate. I'm a journalist. I'm just asking you questions. But we had spoken in Gdansk when he was man of the match, and he was fantastic. They had so many players. If you're a neutral watching that, you can pick out so many positives from Villarreal. But, you know, I've never ridden who I support, and neither have the lads on here, so we're not entirely neutral. So my only regret was that I wasn't in the middle of the Stretford end or K stand. I was right next to instead the Villarreal bench, and they were absolutely floored.
I often feel like that when I'm at the games as well, and you get a moment like that. I remember sitting on my hands when United came back from 2-2 at the Etihad to Spurs City's title party. That's the closest I think I've ever been to celebrating a goal at work. That was absolutely brilliant. Anyway, let's just focus on last night and bask in that moment just for a little bit longer before we start picking holes in the rest of the 90 minutes. My dad was actually singing Viva Ronaldo, he said, on the tram all the way home. I can't remember the last time my dad sang on the tram, if he's ever sang on the tram. He's 70 years old, but it was the sort of moment that that sort of led to that. Is this what it was all about, Laurie? Is this why we were all excited that Ronaldo was back for a moment like that?
It's fantasy, isn't it, really? I mean, if you said in the summer Ronaldo would score a 95th minute winner at Old Trafford in front of the Stretford end in the Champions League, you know, you'd be saying you're mad. And the reality was every bit of as mad as it sounds, really, because for long periods United didn't look very good. But with him on the pitch, you've always got that potential, haven't you? Edinson Cavani came on and changed the game with his pressing, added a bit of chaos to the occasion.
He's still chasing pigeons this morning, Cavani, I think.
I think I've seen him running around our neck of the woods down here in Cheshire, full sprint ahead. And credit to Jesse Lingard. I mean, I didn't appreciate it at the time, but that touch and that duck out the way was actually, you know, he knew what he was doing. It wasn't a fluke. It wasn't something that a random ricochet. And yeah, the way Ronaldo finished it, it's not an easy finish. He's still got to slot it past Rooney, who's a good goalkeeper, as Andy knows, spoken to him the other week. Yeah, it was just a crazy, crazy moment where Old Trafford was still full. You had limbs flying everywhere and people falling over each other, songs up into the air, and people stayed long afterwards to kind of bask in it because I think people appreciated that it was a special moment. I know it's a group stage game against Villarreal, who everyone said, you know, United should really beat, although they've been obdurate opponents every single time United have faced them.
That's the first ever win against Villarreal.
Exactly. You can't overlook that, you know, and this goes back to, you know, times when United were the dominant team in Europe, you know, one of the dominant teams. So I don't think we can overlook how good Villarreal are as a team. You know, clearly very well coached by Unai Emery. They had a real structure about the way they attacked United. It was clinical at times. I don't know. I think they'll do okay in the Champions League. I can see them getting out of the group and going further than that. So, you know, give the opposition credit at times. Admittedly, we'll get onto the faults in United's playing in their system, but at the same time, sometimes you just have to go sod it, you know, tactics out the window. It's about desire and character, and Ronaldo has got that in abundance, and that's why he stayed on the pitch even though he probably wasn't having the best game.
Should we do it then, or what? Or do you want to carry on basking in this glory a little longer, Andy? What do you think? Should we start picking holes in it?
We can do both. You're allowed to have two opinions, and I heard last night, just before half time, a fan near me, so clearly within earshot of the bench, just shout, "This is absolutely shite, Solskjaer, shite." And he was right. But you can also be happy that the team have won. I stayed in Manchester City Centre last night. I was awoken three or four times by people singing Viva Ronaldo. The last time was at 4:15 in the morning. So that's the impact that it has. Like your dad, I got the tram back into the ground and everyone was buzzing. And sometimes football does that. Sometimes Manchester United and other teams win matches that maybe they don't always deserve. And that's one of the reasons that we love football. And he's given us a lift. And one of the things I said to Solskjaer after the game is, can this be a turning point? And he said, of course, we hope so. But there's a lot of United fans need convincing. And I suppose that's where this conversation's going to go. And with good reason, because Villarreal, as Laurie said, really well drilled, really well organised, very good manager of Unai Emery. I wouldn't be surprised to see him in the quarterfinals. I wouldn't be stunned to see him in the semi-finals. I really wouldn't. But Manchester United should be beating them. Manchester United's budget is like five or six times more than Villarreal's. They were the ones who looked a team rather than Manchester United. And we've touched on it in a recent podcast. There's a feeling, I feel, that United relying on the individual moments of brilliance and getting away with it. There were changes last night. Mick Phelan tends to have a much more bigger role in the dugout for European games. He's been there, he's done that. I think he's 59 years old. And I don't know what influence he had down there. Ollie looked a bit shocked to me walking in at half time. He really did. But after the game, a win is like the balm that smooths everything. Other people might say it's the paper which goes over the cracks. And I think both of those points are legitimate ones.
Before we go fully into it, I'm just going to do one more question, if that's all right, because I feel a bit sorry for him in a way. Alex Telles. Laurie, what a volley.
Telles, it's a great hit and it's a great goal. That's what Manchester United needed. What a moment for him. The Brazilian who's coming to the side tonight has delivered, and how!
Unbelievable, I didn't even know he had that in his locker.
I thought you were going to say his hair then.
No, not his hair.
He's got a quiff that's even bigger than mine. I actually said, when Bruno was chipping that free kick to him, I said, what? As in, like, why is that what you've gone for? You've got, you know, players in the box, up from the back, Ronaldo in the air, and you've gone for Alex Telles outside the box, 20 yards out. Okay, I was wrong. We were right behind it in the press box. And as soon as he hit it, you're like, okay, that is in. Brilliant, brilliant goal. At a time when United were, obviously, it was teetering, wasn't it? You know, they were 1-0 down. You know, they've been, luckily, I think they've been behind only for a little bit, you know, 7 minutes. So the atmosphere hadn't built to a point of real tension, real anxiety.
It was an important goal, wasn't it? Important moment.
Really important, crucial. I mean, you know, United have got a new set-piece coach, you know, Eric Ramsey. I'd be intrigued to know sort of his involvement in that, or whether it was just a piece of inspiration from Bruno and Telles. Obviously, they had a little chat beforehand, didn't they, before he went off and went to the edge of the box. Reminded me of the Anthony Martial goal against Man City, where Bruno sort of just chips it over the wall, kind of unexpected, and that element of surprise, you know, really works. I don't think anyone was thinking that he was going to chip it to Telles, and that clearly allowed him to have a bit of space to get his foot properly behind it. I think he struggled sort of defensively, not unlike the other fullback on the other side.
Stop it. Just talk about the goal for the moment.
Fine.
Don't pop the bubble just yet.
But I mean, incredible technique. And to be fair to him, he put in a couple of good corners as well, Telles. You know, we've seen, you know, away at PSG, I called him Mr. Whippy for the fact of him putting the ball in with such, you know, bend and pace and precision, and that was every bit of it, you know, the kind of the laces through the boots, the technique was remarkable, and credit to him.
I even forgave him for celebrating. Normally I get angry when players equalise and don't go and get the ball and immediately run back to the centre circle to go for the winner.
There was a little bit of that, wasn't there, after a moment Bruno started, you know,
come on then, off you come.
As if that really means much in the scheme of the game, you know, like, you know, those valuable few seconds, I don't know.
Yeah, right, okay, let's do it then. It wasn't actually very good, Andy, was it, to be honest? It didn't feel like the team selection worked. It didn't feel like the tactics worked. It felt like United, after the first sort of 10, 15 minutes of really going for it and pressing and winning the ball back high and trying to make things happen, lost the way. How did you read it?
I think United started very well, and you tend to get that in a game where everyone's up for it. There'd been a lot of hype before the game, talk of it being a must-win match. But gradually, Villarreal took control. I was on the side of the pitch where Danjuma was, and he was absolutely shredding Dalot. And I'm sort of... I knew about Danjuma, but I'm just was doing some detail into him, thinking, when did he move from Bournemouth? He actually cost quite a lot of money. Why didn't
he barely even played for Bournemouth until they were in the Championship as well?
Why didn't I know he's this good? I've been writing loads about Villarreal. What on earth's going on here? And then, you know, Capoue, Parejo, Danny Parejo was really experienced. Raul Albiol is a captain. I knew all about Geronimo Rui, the goalkeeper. Paco Alcacer, very renowned forward. People forget he was at Barcelona for 3 years. He was actually having a shocking game. If he would have been on form, Villarreal would have been 2-0 up. So it was really worrying, and I was just thinking, all right, Man United are going behind again and again and again, and I'm thinking 4 defeats in 5 games, the mood's going to slump even more. I thought they were far more dominant in the midfield, and it was a worry. And you could see Bruno getting really frustrated. You could see players all over the shop getting caught out, making mistakes, Lindelof, even Rafael Varane. I think we should credit David De Gea, who was brilliant. He was absolutely brilliant. Again, in front of the Stretford end, Sancho did some all right bits, but was largely peripheral. Ronaldo made the headlines, but I don't think he had a huge impact on the game. It was just really substandard stuff by a better organised, better coached team. And again, the neutral watching it, I'm thinking, this is really high-level football. This is fantastic that they are going away and playing with the confidence that they've got. I'd said on Monday that their way of playing will suit Manchester United because they'll come out and attack. And then I saw loads of interviews where people are saying they're just going to defend deep. And I thought, well, where does the truth lie here? What's gonna happen? And they were just countering. They were pressing like a lot of teams do at Old Trafford. And their counters were absolutely devastating. And I'm sorry, but United's midfield looked completely outclassed. There was discontent among the supporters.
It looked vacant at times, the midfield, in fairness. It didn't even feel like there was a midfield to bypass at times.
I was thinking that this team does not deserve the atmosphere that's been created for them. And Ollie was getting a lot of support as well. And there were individual shouts against him, but the fans were singing his name. Now, in fairness, that was a makeshift defence. There wasn't a lot of minutes in Manchester United's defence. Villarreal had a very strong team and bench. Just looking at some of the names on Villarreal's bench, and they're a strong, very well organised football team and football club, and you can see that. And it changed in the second half. I thought they were better in terms of the possession that they had. They deserved the goal. The goal was a bit scrappy, wasn't it, when it went in front of K-Stan's scoreboard end. And then you're like, oh no, trailing 1-0, second Champions League defeat. I just foresaw this slump coming. But what people might not understand is Villarreal are contractually obliged to draw every game they play. So they were really uncomfortable in a losing position.
Let's talk about the team selection, Laurie, because I sort of text you saying, wow, he's definitely going for it here, Solskjaer, because there was barely any defenders, was there? There was only actually really the two centre-halves so you could classify as defensive players in that 11. Did it work, or was it a bit too brave considering three of the four defenders had barely played this season?
I think needs must, you know, clearly you've got Wan-Bissaka suspended for two games, which beggars belief. You've got Luke Shaw injured, Harry Maguire injured. I mean, he turned up for the youth game that I was at Lee early in the day at 1 o'clock, where United got absolutely walloped 4-0 at half time. It was ended up 4-1. So, you know, Harry Maguire's doing his duties.
Won the second half.
Important, very important. I mean, to be fair, I think that Villarreal team had a few players in that playing the B League, you know, so men's football, more of a team. United were a bit thrown together under 18s, under 23s. Anyway, Harry Maguire was there. He was walking, you know, so I don't know. We'll see how long he's out for. But clearly, Solskjaer had to shuffle his pack, and I think that was the obvious selection at back four. You could maybe have put Eric Bailly in a centre-back and put Lindelof at right-back, but that might have looked a bit cautious against a team like Villarreal, and Eric Bailly is erratic. You can't necessarily say what kind of game he's going to produce for you, so I think Solskjaer kind of, you know, understandably went with that four. And then midfield, you know, he's often derided for going with Fred and McTominay. I think last night showed why he does that, because then you've got two midfielders there that do cover the ground and do kind of, you know, have a presence in midfield. And that's not...
Do you think a lot of people appreciated Fred a bit more watching that 90 minutes?
Yeah, possibly, yeah. I mean, clearly he's not... He misplaces passes and he dives in at times when you're thinking just hold your position. But clearly he brings something to that team. And listen, he came on at left back and produced a cross that ended up scoring the goal. I think was it Club Bruges last season or the season before, where he came on at left back as well. So, you know, two games at left back, two wins for Fred. I think in midfield, clearly you can see, you know, that's where you know they do their best work, and it's been apparent, you know, the times that they've looked susceptible has been really when it's been, you know, not them two together, susceptible to the transitions, I mean. And yeah, as you say, the midfield looked vacant at times last night. McTominay, they are, I believe, trying to get into that mode of can he be that one sitter so that you can then have Pogba and Bruno in the same team. But clearly last night showed that is a very much a work in progress in terms of positional play, in terms of you know, just, you know, his passing range, I suppose his presence. I'm not sure he's 100% fit right now, so I wonder if that's a factor in his performances. But that being said, you know, it did look awkward at times. I mean, I sort of go back to the start though. United started brilliantly, you know, 33 minutes. I know it's only 3 minutes, but from kickoff it was full of intensity. Nice kickoff routine where Ronaldo's putting out to Greenwood, so they clearly worked on that. And you're thinking, wow, okay, Old Trafford's bouncing, they're all at it. And then, you know, Villarreal took their time, rode the storm, and then were the better team, obviously. But then United finished strongly as well. So I think you've got to give Solskjaer some credit for having his team start like that and finish like that. If they're still going like that in the 95th minute, that's not by chance. That's something either psychologically or physically that they're able to do up until... And Villarreal tired, you could see that. Even though Emery had made five subs by 70 minutes, he clearly... knew what he was going to do to refresh the team, like he did in Gdansk. He made all his subs, and it was a, you know, half his team were fresh. United were actually finishing the stronger team, and Solskjaer's substitutions, each one of them paid dividends in terms of, you know, Lingard coming on, Cavani coming on, Fred coming on, Matic coming on. You know, he played a pass straight away to Cavani that sort of seemed to unsettle them. And it did surprise me that Villarreal, I mean, they gave the possession away in the sort of final minute, didn't they, for that goal United scored. They did have, I thought, you know, 94 minutes, I thought, oh, they'll just eat up the clock here. And actually they kind of, you know, I don't know exactly what happened, but they you know, United were able to intercept it and go on the front foot again. So I do think you have to give Solskjaer credit for his substitutions changing the game, albeit he's obviously tried something against Villarreal by putting McTominay in there with Pogba and kind of giving Pogba license to get forward. Diogo Dalo come into midfield when in possession of the ball. I think it made United narrow at times, and he's clearly not as good a player on the ball as Joao Cancelo, which is who we've seen do that so well for Man City. But I think he was trying something against a team that he's had difficulties with breaking down previously. So I can see where he was coming from if it didn't actually work in practice.
It's a good point you mentioned in the subs, Laurie. I think it's a really important point, this, because I asked Ollie after the game about it, and he gave like a 30-second answer, which I think he could have spoke for 10 minutes on those substitutions. But what I was told was that Villarreal were going for something called the tactical periodization approach. And if you watch the three substitutes warming up intensely at match pace from about the 50th minute, and what also happened, I think Cavani went to warm up in the wrong area, and Villarreal's bench went absolutely mental because he was in the wrong area, which is fair enough. And Edinson was just like, in front of the Stretford end. I don't even think he realises that the fans are singing about him because it's sung in such a strong Manchester accent. I was hoping he'd pick out the word Uruguay, but I don't think he does. We need to get this message to him. Anyway, Villarreal did this in Gdansk, and Ole didn't react to it. And last night, he did react to it. So he let them go out there, put this massive injection of energy into the Villarreal team. They used up all the changes, didn't they? And what he did, he counteracted and he brought his substitutes on. And if you're going to question Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's tactics, which people do, and sometimes with good reason, you've also got to praise him, because his substitutes nulled a very intelligent set of changes from Unai Emery. And we spoke about the impact that the substitutes made and the running that Cavani did. Even Fred, he played his part in the goal, and Lingard as well. So he definitely deserves some credit for those changes. I only wish you would have explained it to me at more length, but a quick 2-minute television interview post-match doesn't really lend itself to that. I'd love to have a coffee with him for half an hour where he goes into real detail. And it's quite difficult for him to do publicly, isn't it? Because, you know, he can't go... He can't,
I think
he
would do him some credit, though, Andy, in a way.
Yeah,
I think it would do him some credit. I think it's one area that he really gets hammered on. And we've done it ourselves podcast, to be fair. We've questioned his changes.
We have, but I mean, what more can you say about Dalot? To be fair to Dalot, he got rinsed, but he gave it his every last drop. He really did. Alex Telles did. So then you ask, well, why are they playing at Manchester United? Well, Ollie didn't bring him in. And Ollie wanted another right back in. And Dalot wouldn't have started the game if it wasn't for Wan-Bissaka missing. So there's always mitigating circumstances as well. But you're right, getting him to talk about tactics would be really interesting.
Did Ollie use the term, what was it, tactical periodized?
No, he didn't. I'm just giving you inside information.
You just know your stuff, don't you, Andy?
I don't know anything like the level of the...
What was the term
my
again?
My job is to pass on reliable and insightful information. Now, I don't have a UEFA B, let alone an A, let alone a pro licence, but I speak to people who know far more than I do, and it's...
I'm just getting the dictionary out, Andy. Go on, say, what was it again? I'm just looking it up.
Tactical periodisation. He says not...
It's actually a cool book.
He says not looking at a screen.
It's an interesting point, though, isn't it? From. Because... You very rarely hear Solskjaer speak in those sort of terms. Other managers speak like that all the time. Maybe Ole purposely doesn't talk about that. I don't know. But it is an area, Laurie, that we don't often hear from Solskjaer in his press conferences, that level of detail.
I think generally managers are a little bit reluctant to go into such detail because you know, sometimes they just don't want to. They don't want to reveal too much, and they can't really be bothered to go into such, you know, it's a press conference, it's 20 minutes, it's, you know, you kind of, you're talking generally about stuff rather than specifics. And also I feel like, you know, he perhaps doesn't feel like he has to, you know, he knows what they're doing in house.
True.
And true. So therefore his influence is, you can't ignore, you know, the kind of mentality of players, character and what have you. Clearly tactics are a huge part, but I think Ollie likes to press home the kind of approach generally that players need for a game, and that was something that was clearly lacking when he took over. So that's what he's, you know, the culture of the club is something that he's changed, but he does have a tactical eye. He does know what he's doing when it comes to setting a team out, and I do think it is a stick that he's beaten with, and I would be intrigued, you know, I think there is a space for him to kind of open out a little bit more on that kind of stuff. Tactical periodisation, by the way, and I only know this because I did an interview with Tony Strudwick.
You're going to do it to me now.
I'm going to try, and I'm probably going to get hammered by people who say I'm talking absolute rubbish. But it was actually something that Jose Mourinho properly got behind, in terms of basically training players as you would play a match. So so that's what Unai Emery was doing on the touchline with his players, you know, warming them up as if they were in the game, and kind of having their fitness levels at that, you know, everything's with a ball. You know, it's all very much match related, so that's the kind of general principle. But there is a little bit of butting heads when it comes to data analysis, I think, with it. So, for example, Jose Mourinho would often sort of smell how his players were doing fitness wise. You know, not literally, not sort of get under their armpits, but he would sort of have an instinct for whether he reckoned they were fit enough or not, and that would sometimes be at odds with what the sports science guys were saying. So it's an interesting area, and hopefully I'm right, and people aren't going to at me and tell me I'm talking rubbish.
No, I think you're right. I think it's interesting as well, and I can see you now becoming a Premier League manager. My worry is not about your tactical knowledge, it's about walking into a dressing room with that quiff and what the other players would think of you when they see you. But seriously, I think it's interesting because you've spoke to people who've told you that, and that's absolutely legitimate as a journalist to do that. And I've got the phrases, and you just explained it to me. So I'll get some more rock hard phrases next week, and you can explain them after we've drawn 1-1 against Everton.
Right, before we move on then, I want to talk about a little bit about an article that James Horncastle has done. It's a fascinating interview with Leonardo Bonucci that's on The Athletic at the minute. He absolutely buries Declan Rice. It's very interesting to see what he says about him in relation to the final of the Euros, and how Rice said that I think England had 10 times more motivation than Italy, and Bonucci found that quite humorous. But also there's some bits in there actually about Cristiano Ronaldo, and isn't it a really, really, really strange take for me? I was really shocked when I read this, Andy. I don't know about you, but he was sort of saying that Ronaldo's influence was massive on the team. I expect that, fine. But he sort of said that they came to the point where they just expected him to win the game on his own, and it wasn't like the team really needed to do what they'd done in the past, because they all felt like Ronaldo was just going to go and wave his magic wand and win the match. I don't think we've got to that point at United, have we? But it's a bit of a narrative that we've never really heard before. It's always that Ronaldo just comes in and brings everyone up a level. Well, he's actually saying they went down a level in a way.
I think it's really interesting. Bonucci's ahead and he's worth listening to. And Cellini as well, they're both brilliant. We definitely heard it at Barcelona with, it was called Messi Dependencia, the dependence on one player to the point that it's actually detrimental. I find Juventus quite interesting, and I spoke to Patrice Evra a lot about Juventus and how they used Paul Pogba. And there were times that Bonucci felt that as Pogba was maturing into a better player, and the other Juventus players felt this, that he had to be indulged. Yes, he was going to give the ball away. Yes, he was going to cost them, but he could also equally provide those match-winning moments. I think Ronaldo's time in Turin was with a general slight decline, which has now been exacerbated since he's left, in a team which was so dominant that it was an ageing team as well. But Juventus was a huge success story for close on a decade. I don't know the internal politics of what he was like inside the dressing room, but I do know a long time ago he was angling to get out of Juventus, and I think the club were happy for him to, mainly for financial reasons, because his statistics were very good. Ronaldo there, I don't know. I think more interesting stuff will come out in 5 or 10 years, which tally with what you've said.
Very interesting. Have a look at that on The Athletic, certainly. Okay, we need to preview Everton.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Right, well, we've had a few results this season, Laurie, haven't we, that have been really, really exciting, that have filled us with enthusiasm for the next game. We felt like we're just going to bounce into the next match. I'm thinking the 5-1 win against Leeds. I'm thinking the 4-1 against Newcastle. Even the late drama at the London Stadium against West Ham. And every single time, the bubble's been popped. It's not going to be popped this time against Everton, is it?
Rafa Benitez is Everton.
Is it?
You can see it, you is, can see it again. I don't know. I don't know. I mean, they just look really functional, don't they? I mean, you know, they've spent about, what is it, $1.5 million in the summer. They've bought a load of players that you think are kind of past it or kind of have flattered to deceive in Andros Townsend and Solomon Rondon and Damari Gray. They've obviously got injuries to key players.
Andros Townsend's been brilliant. I did the Everton-Burnley game a few weeks ago. And to be honest, Burnley outplayed Everton for long periods and then were just blown away by sort of three goals in no time in the second half. But Andros, I interviewed Andros Townsend afterwards and he just spoke so well. He just sort of said, I can't believe I'm here. And the fact that I'm here, I'm going to give this absolutely everything I've got. And you can see that in the way he's playing. I mean, they're not glamorous names by any stretch, are they? But they seem to have made a difference to that team.
Often with Everton, we've looked at them and thought, oh, they've got real good talent there. But actually, as a team, they don't function that well. You know, James Rodriguez, you sort of look at, and obviously he's now departed as a luxury player that they had. Whereas clearly Benitez will demand players that fit into his structure and do what he asks of them. So yeah, they could make it difficult for United. I'm intrigued to see what lineup Solskjaer goes with. I wonder, does Edinson Cavani start the game? You know, the way that he came off the bench against Villarreal.
Who for?
Well, this is the question. You know, do you then, Cristiano Ronaldo, does he start on the bench after playing so many games in such quick succession?
Are you going to tell him?
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer could. That's his job.
Do you think he will?
It'd be weird. I think Ronaldo will want to play, and I think that basically will decide the call. I mean, he did come out onto the left wing both times that Cavani's come on, you know, last 10 minutes against Villa and obviously Villarreal. It's not probably it's not his best position, is it, now? Because he can't sort of dribble past players and make those runs up and down the wing. He can do it in bursts, but not on a consistent basis. So I suppose if Cavani is to start, yeah, you would probably put Ronaldo on the bench. But we'll see. It's just difficult to not see how he approached that game and think, right, put him in the next game. I mean, maybe you just look at it and go, okay, he's very effective off the bench and what a player to have to come on late in the game to really change matters. So maybe that's how he'll judge it. Clearly, the back line again will have a couple of different faces in. Wan-Bissaka will be back. So, you know, you've got a bit more defensive solidity there.
Is Luke Shaw going to be all right for it as well? There was some suggestion that he could be okay.
Yeah, it's touch and go. I think they'd really want him to be. I don't know if Andy knows any more, but oftentimes Luke Shaw's, I think he's a little bit similar to Cavani in that he needs a couple of days really good training to be fit to play, basically. Whereas someone like Scott McTominay can kind of be in bed for 2 days and he's a bit of a robot and he can come out and go on the pitch and play 90 minutes. So yeah, we'll know, I suppose, in the next 48 hours whether Shaw's, you know, fit to start. But I think he's a real key player for United. I know Telles scored a brilliant goal, but the way that Shaw carries the ball, particularly into midfield, is really valuable. It's an intriguing game.
With Shaw, Laurie's totally right what he says. He needs to be training, he needs to be playing. Wayne Rooney was like that as well. And as for the forwards, such a wonderful choice for Ollie to choose against a very well-organised Everton team. Love him or love him, Benitez has got something as a manager. What he did at Valencia, even in moments at Newcastle United, I think he managed in the North West before at a club and he might have won something quite close to Everton. But he's got something. He absolutely has got something. And look at his results. You know, look at his recruitment. He rubs a lot of people up the wrong way, but I think he'll do a good job there. And Everton wasted a lot of money last year under Ancelotti, and they started the season well and faded away. I think it's going to be a very tough game. I was going to say at Goodison then, but it's at Old Trafford. I better not go to Goodison because I'm at the match.
You mentioned rubbing people at the wrong way. I just remembered, obviously, Ronaldo at Real Madrid. You know, Benitez gave him a disc of how to score goals, and you know, Ronaldo allegedly sent him a DVD or whatever it was back of him scoring a load of goals and saying, you know, have a look at this, Rafa. So I do, thinking about it, he'll want to start that game 100% and he'll want to score and prove a point.
I interviewed Rafa a few years ago for that thing that it was the anniversary of the thing that Andy just mentioned that's going to get edited out. And it was a stage show in Liverpool or something like that where they were sort of reenacting the special night that they'd had. I don't really remember the details, probably for the best. But we met in a hotel. Benitez gave a really long interview about, a really short interview about this, but he was sort of showing his support. He was a manager in 2005 and this was 10 years on. And after he finished, he asked me who I supported, just randomly. I don't have really ever been asked that after an interview at that point. I told him. And then he spent ages afterwards talking about the tactics that United had had in certain matches and the ideas that he had about the European Cup finals that they'd lost, especially the 2011 one. He had the salt and pepper shakers out and talking through all the different factors of that game and where he felt Barcelona had won the match and things like that. I mean, unfortunately, it wasn't recorded, but it was far more interesting than the interview. And speaking to people at Everton as well now, Carlo Ancelotti is a great manager. Don't take this the wrong way at all. He's done fantastic things, but he's a very different manager to Benitez. There was a lot that the players had to work out for themselves in the Everton team last year, and there's absolutely nothing that they have to work out for themselves this time around. His level of detail has been incredible. It's blown some of the players away to the point where they can't believe how much he knows about them. That's what he's like, Rafa, yeah, isn't
he? The job he did at Tenerife was incredible, and that got him the Valencia job. I know Newcastle United fans who really like him, not just because of his tactical acumen, but he engaged with fans. Basically, he got a few of them down at the training ground and said, this is what I'm doing. This is why I'm doing it. And then they funneled that information back out and they really, really liked Rafa Benitez at Newcastle, even more than they love Steve Bruce, who's having an absolutely horrendous time there. So I thought Everton, when they came to Old Trafford pre-season, were really poor. And less of what I thought, I know Manchester United thought that they were really, really poor. But that was pre-season. We can't read too much into that. And again, if Manchester United do not win, then the mood's going to stay pretty much where it is. Ronaldo's winner gives us some respite, but dropping more points at home in the league will be a worry. Do you not think, Laurie?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, this is the one. I mean, as Ian said, you know, needs to be momentum, needs to kind of build and build and kind of a consistent run. You know, there's still only 1 point off top, you know, after the doom and gloom of Aston Villa. So there's scope, but it can't be another result like that or a performance like that. It'll just suck the mood out of the place.
Yeah. You know, as well, I think what we should do should end this podcast how we started, because there was so much excitement after that result last night. A lot of people will be tuning into this podcast with a massive smile on the face, and we've probably took it away from them a little bit. So let's restore it. Andy, how much excitement is there around Manchester for this game now? You stayed in the city centre last night. You were at the game last night. You go into the Everton match. Everyone wants a ticket again for this. Everyone wants to see United play.
Tickets have been really hard since Ronaldo came back. It's a hot ticket, and you know, not every club sells out their home Champions League group games, do they? As Ed Woodward pointed out, probably wanting to get fans on side. I think the atmosphere's deflated a little bit because Manchester United have not been winning every match, but that was brilliant. The ending was brilliant on Wednesday. People will arrive at Old Trafford with loads of enthusiasm before the game on Saturday. They'll buy their copy of United We Stand and they'll hope for more of the same. I certainly hope for more of the same, and I think everyone listening to this podcast does. But we know those doubts will never be far from the surface, and the doubts are more on the manager at the moment than on any player. But I think a couple of those players, if they're selected, talking people like Jadon Sancho, they need to raise the levels as well, because they were brought to be stars and it's not quite happened yet.
Yeah, do you think the start, Laurie, and some of the last minute winners and all that sort of side, again, Ronaldo being back, everything that goes into it, do you think that sucked more people in this year? Do you feel like there's more eyes on United again?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's, you know, you look at the stadium and the broadcasters, they were, you know, last night they were sort of dotted along the touchline all the way down to the Villarreal end, and it was, you know, you could see that everyone wanted a piece of it. I look at the sort of last minute winners and the kind of these big occasions. Some people call it hero ball, and like, you know, well, where's the tactics? Where's the kind of consistency? Sometimes football is just about enjoyment and sitting back and going, wow, anything can happen. It's unpredictable. Anything, you know, it's last minute. You know, I know Ole Gunnar Solskjaer probably gets stick for referring back to 99 a lot, but it was such a pivotal moment in United's history that you can't ignore the fact that, you know, they do come from behind and do score late winners. And you know, that was a case in point with Ronaldo, you know, the latest winner by Manchester United player in a European game ever, you know, just surpassing Solskjaer.
So, is that right? I didn't know that.
That's what my dad texted.
Night was.
That's what my dad texted me last night. I probably should have checked right. It before repeating it on a podcast, but I think it's legit. You know, it's got to be, hasn't it? It'll certainly
your
be.
Your dad texts you, mate. Don't question it. Yeah,
he's usually quite on the ball with these kind of things. I know your dad was texting you from the tram. My dad was texting me from home, sort of. But equally, you know, they were both singing Viva Ronaldo. So, and I think I don't think you can get away from that. Just enjoy football sometimes. You know, let's not go too deep into it. Let's not like overanalyze things. Just enjoy it. And for sure, under Solskjaer, United have had more of those moments than under any manager since Ferguson, you know, massively so. So I get excited going to Old Trafford because you never know what's going to happen.
Amen, Laurie.
You're totally right, and I love it that your dads are messaging you. I'd say the same about my dad, but A, he passed away 2 years ago, but B, he was moaning after the treble win. He was one of these fans who was never, ever happy. He would have been slaughtering everybody last night because that's just what he did. And I see some people just putting the frustration of their whole life and loading it onto a football club. Yeah, my dad was moaning in Barcelona the day after the treble. I'm like, just won the treble. Yeah, but we didn't turn up, son. We were crap. But we've just won the treble. I don't care. Bayern Munich outplayed us. Yeah, but we've just won the treble. I don't care, son. That was a disgrace of a performance. No, he's just going round in circles there. So I'm glad that, you know, Laurie's dad texting stats. That's fantastic. And your dad's singing on the Metrolink. This is the Ronaldo effect, isn't it? Let's hope that it carries on.
Let's hope it carries on indeed. What a brilliant way to finish it. Andy, thank you so much for joining us. Laurie, you as well. I've just got enough time to tell you that if you don't already subscribe to The Athletic, please do so. You can still get a 33% discount as well by going to theathletic.com/ManUnitedPod. I need to apologise as well. I was supposed to work in questions from the real-time section of the Athletic app as well. I was just looking through them a moment ago. I think we answered most of the questions that had been sent through. So Rishi, KD, Mark, and Blah as well. I'm so sorry that we didn't get to your questions, but I hope they were answered in the conversation that we had during that. Keep an eye out always for Carl and Laurie posting an opportunity for you to ask questions. Thank you for listening as well, guys. Let's see what Everton brings. See you Monday.
The Athletic.